Hello and welcome to The On-Call Room,
a Grey's Anatomy podcast.
I'm Abby.
I'm Bree.
And it's a beautiful day to podcast. I always get really nervous when we start recording. Welcome. This is a deep dive of all of the episodes of Grey's Anatomy. I'm using my NPR voice. We are currently in season 12, episode 8 and 9.
Things We Lost in the Fire and The Sound of Silence, two of the saddest episodes you will ever watch.
Yes. And go back and listen to all the other ones if this is your first time, or start here and work backwards. That might be fun.
That could be fun.
We are a spoiler podcast. We talk about everything in the entire Grey's universe. So if you haven't finished the show, we highly recommend doing that.
Before you listen.
Yeah. One of the ways that you can support us and help keep us doing this all the time and cheerlead us on the way is by going to patreon.com/theoncallroom. You can pledge to be an intern, resident, or an attending. These levels give you different benefits. There's a private Facebook group. There's our monthly Zoom calls, which we just had.
So much fun.
So much fun.
We had a lot of new faces tonight.
Yeah, loved all the new people. We had people in Bloomington, Indiana, where I just was, where I just was. Is that right?
Yeah.
Where I just were.
Where I just was.
Where I just was. And we had someone from Singapore.
Which is so cool.
Where I was not.
Yeah. She was in the future.
Yeah, it was lovely. So that's a really fun thing you get. We also do bonus episodes and once a month, and you get post-op, which is the like final 10 minutes of the episode after we call time of death, if you're listening on the Patreon app. So today's post-op topic is about Arizona and the cute firefighter woman who had a butt burn.
Yes. You can also follow us on Instagram at The On-Call Room Pod. You can reach us at our website, theoncallroompod.com, or you can leave a review. Rate and review us. It is great. 5 scalpels, please. That's what we ask. What does Glennon Doyle say in hers? Like,
oh, I don't
know. If you don't care for it or whatever, like, that's fine. You don't have to.
Just don't leave a review.
Yeah. So if you don't care for it, just skip the review part and move forward.
Yeah. That's pretty much the business, right?
That's the business.
That's the business. I just wanted to say we both had a weekend full of debauchery.
Oh, my God.
Separate of each other.
Yeah, I will just say that the people in the Zoom hangout know that I had such a bad hangover yesterday that I ordered Uber Eats twice from 2 different places. Both involved burgers, and I didn't get off my couch. John's in Texas for work, and this is what happens when your husband leaves. Shit falls apart.
And I was at a bachelorette party that I planned, which I feel like lended itself to being even a little more drunk than I normally would be, because the stress, like not the stress, but the like having the to stress. Plan it is, and it went like beautifully. Here are some things I would say that I loved. One was there's a really cool LGBTQ owned resort in Saugatuck called the Dunes.
Mm-hmm.
And you've been there?
Mm-hmm.
What the?
For a bachelorette party.
You have?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I haven't. And now I'm like, okay, well, if I want a pool to go to, I'm going to go there.
Oh, wait, no, I'm thinking of something different.
Okay, so the Dunes is like, it's a hotel resort. They have nightlife. They have drag shows on Wednesdays, bingo on Tuesdays, all these things.
Wait, maybe I have been there. Do they have a bar?
Yeah, they have a big, it looks like a tiki bar.
I feel like I've been there.
Okay, but then the pool is huge and open to the public. And I think, though, you either have to be staying there or, like, we rented a cabana, which it was $60 for the whole day.
Oh, that's fun.
From 11 to 7. And so, and we had, like, 7 people. So, yeah. Super cheap. They have a bar and you can drink in the pool.
Oh, and it's like floaties. Being at an all-inclusive.
Exactly. So, and the drinks are strong.
Yeah.
And so we went there and it was just really lovely because oftentimes when you go to a pool, I feel like as a group of girls, and it's just a little weird when there's like other groups of dudes and you feel a little bit like, I don't know, uncomfortable, but everyone was so welcoming and lovely and also not into women in a beautiful way where I did not feel, and no one felt like, everyone felt they could be ourselves. We were playing beach games or like volleyball with all the people. Like it was just really so much fun. I loved it. And then another great activity is we went out. So the theme was Schitt's Creek of the bachelorette party. So the one night we wore wigs like Moira Rose.
So fun.
So we all had black on, which wasn't planned, but we just did. And then we all had different colored wigs. They were like all matching wigs, but in different colors. I would like to do this again, but just like choose the wig that you want. But
Where did the wigs end up at the end? Did everyone
take them away?
Oh.
I know. I should have kept them, but they were gross. And they weren't they were like the cheapest wigs possible. The Bachelorette was not eco-friendly.
Okay.
This party.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the wigs were like you had, you know, I French braided everyone's hair into pigtail braids and then like pinned them up. And then we had wig caps and then the wigs. And I felt like the anonymity, I mean, I still looked like me, I guess, but I didn't feel like it. I felt like, I don't know, it was just so much fun. Like, I wasn't embarrassed to do dance and do karaoke because I was like, no one knows who the fuck I am.
Should we start wearing wigs like Moira?
Yes, yeah. That's what I'm saying. And like, we also had wigs and then heart-shaped glasses in the color of the wig. So I had like the blue wig and the blue glasses.
Yeah.
And we came up names for ourselves. I was, oh my God. I kept saying it wrong. It's Violet. Violet Beauregard was my
from
name.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah, because I had all blue, whatever. It was just really fun. And my favorite part of the night, I would say, is my friend Brianna is just so funny.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. She's actually Brianna. I always say it wrong.
Oh, I'm not Brianna. I'm Brianna.
And she... there were these two boys kind of like lingering. Also, Saugatuck has so much better nightlife.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It was so much fun. But these two boys were like at this, like, it wasn't a club, whatever a club in Saugatuck would be dancing. And so she just started doing what she called fast feet. She just like, her feet started going as fast as she could in her arms. They literally like couldn't run away faster from us. And then she, during a Lizzo song, something happened. I forget what the lyric was. And it was perfect. She like ripped off her wig and threw it into the crowd. And then she looks at me and no one else heard about me. And she goes, I'm going wig snatching. And she went up to behind her friend Carly and just ripped her wig off the same way, like just threw it into the air. And Carly acted as if it was like she did not have other hair. Like she screamed, covered her head, and ran away. And the whole night it was like, Brianna, that was mean. And like it was just, it was just one of those, I had like crazy laughs. I'd also had shots of tequila.
Yeah, so that makes everything funnier.
But I would like to introduce wigs to our friend group.
Okay.
Especially because then I can have my short haircut. I can get a long-ass wig for when I want to have one.
Yes. Isn't there an episode of Schitt's Creek where Moira wears a wig as a hat, so she wears a wig and then she has another wig on top of her?
Probably.
That is what I want to be doing.
So that you can just like...
Multiple wigs.
Yeah. We should do that. It was so much fun. But yeah, I'm tired. Today I was supposed to wake up really early and... Then I didn't.
Also, yeah, like usually we text on Monday and I did not get any text from you until like very late in the day. And so I figured you were recovering.
I woke up late and then had to make up for the lost time. I woke up late because I had so much stuff to do today.
Yeah.
Got it all done.
Good. Yeah. Good. And now we're here.
Yeah. So we have a short intro because there's a lot to talk about.
Yes.
These episodes were the mid-season finale and the mid-season premiere.
And I didn't know that until you told me that today.
Yeah, they're texting. They're heavy, both of them.
Yeah, super heavy. We considered doing them separately, but we decided to push them together. So.
I think it makes sense. It's the cliffhanger and then...
The hang of the cliff.
Exactly.
doesn't make any sense. So, monologues?
Yeah, why don't you start?
Okay. They say you fight fire with fire. We do it in medicine all the time. We cut you to repair your injury. We hurt you to heal you. We stoke the flames... But playing with fire is a dangerous thing. When we strike that match, we like to think we can control the burn. We like to think we have any control at all, but fire is wildly difficult to contain. And just when you think you've extinguished the blaze, it reignites. It sucks in air and burns hotter and brighter than ever. Meredith Grey.
And the second one, in group settings, men are 75% more likely to speak up than women. And when a woman does speak up, it's statistically probable her male counterparts will either interrupt her or speak over her. It's not because they're rude, it's science. The female voice is scientifically proven to be more difficult for a male brain to register. What does this mean? It means in this world where men are bigger, stronger, faster, if you're not ready to fight, the silence will kill you. Don't let fear keep you quiet. You have a voice, so use it. Speak up, raise your hands, shout your answers. Make yourself heard. Whatever it takes, just find your voice, and when you do, fill the damn silence.
MG. Shotgun workup.
Good luck reading Meredith Grey's.
We have John Finch. Partial, is that partial?
Yeah.
Thickness burns, smoke inhalation, and impalement injury. Casey burns, severe lung damage, smoke inhalation, partially collapsed lung, heart failure, rhabdomyolysis.
Perfect.
Charlotte burns. Callie and Jackson's patient proximal humerus fracture, full thickness burns, second degree burns, LU, head laceration, abdominal contusions, seizure, epidural hematoma, and then Meredith
There's
Gray.
A lot going on here.
Tinnitus. That looks like tiramisu.
It does. Trismus?
Trismus. Dislocated jaw, tibial plateau, fracture of the left leg, Montega fracture in left forearm, dislocated elbow, barotrauma, fractured left ribs, 5'8", concussion, left pneumothorax, subcontusious emphysema, traumatic larynx injury, and panic attack.
Yeah, and we probably said 80 of those wrong.
It's fine.
But that's, we're doctors.
Yeah.
All right. And just a reminder, our rounds are a lot longer so that we can talk about
whatever the fuck we want.
Exactly. So first rounds we have, it's Bailey's first crisis as chief and it's time. And this time it's a fire on Mount Baker that has brought a ton of firefighters into the Grace Sloan Memorial. Richard gives her a pep talk and tells her that she knows everything she needs to know to make this happen. One of her biggest cases is with the fire chief named Casey. Was he the chief? I just assumed he was.
I think he was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Casey came into the ER with severe burns on his chest. Bailey examined him and found that she could see his lung from the outside through a wound. Maggie examined it and said there was severe damage to his lungs. There wasn't an available OR, so they took him to the burn unit while they waited. When he struggled to breathe, Maggie wanted to intubate, but Casey refused. One of his lungs was partially collapsed, and the other was damaged from smoke inhalation, which is why he couldn't breathe. It was also causing heart failure. Since both he and the doctors knew he was going to die, they gave only palliative care. He died while talking to his wife. This case hit Bailey the hardest.
So sad. We'll talk about that. The entire day, Joe is feeling very alone and estranged by the way that Alex, Meredith, and Stephanie are treating her. She hides in a closet and cries, and when she tries to talk to Alex, Meredith tells her to go away, like very angrily. Mm-hmm. Her and Steph end up apologizing to each other at the end of the episode, and when she goes home in tears to tell Alex that she's going to stay with Steph for a while, he pulls out a ring. He's had it for over a month, and that's what him and Meredith were working on all day. He's been thinking about proposing to her forever, but hadn't been able to find the right time. The episode ends with a cliffhanger of whether or not she's going to say yes. In The Sound of Silence, it's clear that Joe's living at the loft and Alex is staying at the hospital and at Mara's house with her kids. At the end of the episode, Meredith tells him that it's clear Joe loves him and it's okay to have more than one person.
Andrew and Maggie are still sleeping together, and she makes it very clear with him that they cannot show their feelings in public at work. There is a moment when he puts his hand on hers, and she freaks out at him. He tells her that his feelings are not professional about her. At the end of the episode, she finds him sleeping in an on-call room and tells him that she has unprofessional feelings about him as well. They decide to sleep together yet again.
Owen's mom's boyfriend comes into the hospital because he's one of the burn patients. Nathan Riggs and Meredith are working on him together and butting heads the entire way. During the surgery, Owen comes in and demands that Riggs be taken off the surgery. There's also a moment when Riggs sees Mama Hunt and they embrace in a huge hug. He tells Owen that he already saw her and refers to her as his family as well. Owen tells them they are not his family, and he punches him twice in the face. Meredith ends up talking to Mama Hunt and learning why Owen is not okay. She approaches him at the end of the episode and says to him he needs to get his act together and that she did not know he had a sister. When Amelia finds out that Meredith knows why Hunt is upset, she and Meredith have a huge fight. They both say incredibly horrible things to each other, and it ends with Meredith asking Amelia to move out immediately. At the end of the day, we see Amelia at the bar drinking a San Pellegrino. Riggs pulls up a chair next to her and asks if she'd like a whiskey. She says no, a vodka tonic. And that is when the episode ends.
Then we have for the next one, Lou, age 45, comes into the ER after a car accident with a head laceration and abdominal contusions. He's lost consciousness in the field. Wow, that was a hard word for me to say.
It's all right.
But was awake upon arrival at the hospital. He had neurosymptoms, so they ordered a head CT. While in the ER, he had a seizure. Meredith continued to examine him, but while her back was turned, he got up in a fugue state. Meredith tried to get him back in bed, but he attacked her. Amelia was supposed to have come in for a consult with Meredith that day, but because she was mad at Meredith and had been drinking, she chose to see the other trauma first. Meredith was alone until Penny found her on the floor. The entire episode then follows Meredith's experience as a patient throughout 6 weeks, from losing her hearing to having her jaw wired shut to having a failed visit with her children and observing the hospital from her bed. There are a few huge moments for Penny throughout this episode as she finally finds her voice as well.
And then finally, one of the main big ideas and themes throughout The Sound of Silence finally comes to a head when Richard takes Meredith out of her bed to talk to her about forgiveness. He tells her that she needs to forgive Lou, Amelia, Derek, and even herself. It's a really emotional scene, and I think it becomes a huge turning point for Meredith's emotional healing for the second half of the season. She sees Lou and forgives him, but she isn't quite ready to do the same for Amelia. Amelia is not ready to forgive herself yet either, but she is 30 days sober.
Lots of heavy stuff there.
Yeah. First notes?
Yeah. Mine is more car scenes.
Mine is Joe is very left out of the Marin Alex show.
Yeah.
And we do find out why. I have a note that I was like, oh my God, this is when he proposes. Like, I don't remember that.
Also, he just goes, yeah.
Yeah. To be fair, when John proposed to me, he said, will you marry me? But at least he asked a question, you know, didn't just like, yeah.
Okay, there's so much to talk about. I feel like one of the things in this first one that you and I both had big feelings about was the Casey patient.
Yes, totally.
I think there is something so... Also, I liked both of these because there was one major patient or, you know, like the fire in general was one thing and then there's Meredith's situation in the other. Like, again, it's nice to focus on little things. It was such, to me, a perfect thing. It was Bailey's first crisis and she ends up dealing with a patient who is also, you know, the chief or the whatever in charge of his people. And so I feel like she saw herself so much in him in the sense of, like, all he was concerned about was, like, did he do his people well? Is the fire stopped? Like, I'll take them before me. And I just, the fact that Bailey got to be there for him, like, she kept saying to him, like, what do you need?
Yeah.
It was just, it hit me really hard. And there's something crazy about when someone knows they're going to die and doesn't fight it or isn't scared by it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I have some notes in here that were just like, I felt really bad for him. And like the minute he showed up, I didn't really remember this storyline, but the minute you see him, you just have this sense of like, this isn't going to go well. And he really is just concerned for everyone else. Like where he's saying like, no, take that person to the ER. And you know, like Bailey is trying to say, well, we're taking care of you. I am the chief here. We're going to do what's best. I think the part that really got me too was when Maggie examines him and then they like come out and she's like, let me know if there's an OR. And DeLuca is a bit confused, you know? And he's like, well, shouldn't he go to the front of the line for an OR? And Bailey's like, no, you know, because he's going to die. And she's like, we're just going to let him die or whatever he said. And she said, he knows, like he knows he's dying too. And that was like, and then DeLuca gets it. And then you as a viewer gets it. And he, that's why he doesn't want to be intubated. Like he just wants to see and talk to his wife one last time. And that's what he holds on for.
And yeah. And I do believe, obviously there are times when the human body can't hold on to say goodbye, but I feel like there are times that people do hold on. Like you hear all the stories of until someone says like, it's okay.
You can go. That happened with my grandpa.
Yeah. And like, I really do think there is something to be said about like your spirit fighting.
Yeah.
And even though it won't succeed, it fights until it. And then I do believe there must be, I don't know, I haven't died, but a sense of like you let go.
Yeah.
And I think like, as soon as he said, I love you to his wife and the, oh, I'm jumping all around. We can go backwards in a second. But like when the wife came, she was so incredible. Obviously he's in a job. I mean, they're in Seattle. He obviously is like fighting wildfires, not just like, he's not just like a city firefighter.
Not just structure fires. Yeah.
And so there's definitely a level of like, danger in his job too. And when she's like, I just want to prepare you, Maggie says to her. And she's like, I've been preparing for this for 30 years. And I really feel like she did. Like,
oh, I think so too. There's this, and it kind of looked like that guy. Maybe it was the same actor. I don't think it was, but John and I watched, it was a show, and the first one we watched was about the Unabomber.
Uh-huh.
And then the second season was about the bombings in Atlanta.
The nightclub?
During the Olympics, like in the 90s.
Yeah.
And how they thought it was this one guy and it really wasn't, and how they like made his life a living hell. But there was a character in there where he came and he like examined and like knew a shit about bombs, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Like that was his job. And at the end of this, he ends up retiring. And I don't know if that is like a completely true story or if that was like, you know, a dramatization or whatever. But his wife said a similar thing where he was like, I'm done with this job. And she was like, and she cries across the table from him. They're like probably in their 60s. And she was like, I've been waiting my whole life for you to like die, to like get the call, because he worked such a dangerous job. And I think there are so many people who are in careers like that, where the partner is at home, like, when am I going to get the call?
Yeah.
You know,
what a wild level of tense to live, like that tension to live in. I was proud of her. It seemed like yeah, they've been preparing for it in a way too, where they both, he held on so she could see him and she held it together so he could feel safe enough to go. And when she said, who I assume Doug and Susan are their kids, she's like, Doug and Susan are on their way. I won't be alone.
Yes.
Like just even reassuring that. And she says, you did good, Casey.
Which is like, ooh, because I think too, he really needed to hear that. Like everyone, and Bailey tells him we've had no losses. Like he didn't lose any of his team. The only one that ended up losing their life was him. I sobbed. Like I'm going to be completely honest. Like when he died, I did like a hunch over cry. I was alone home. I was hungover. Like other things were going on, but I was like, that is just,
it was so selfless of her.
Yeah.
To not take that moment for herself.
Yeah. And just give him the space to go, like gently. It reminds me of this, prose that this person wrote about his partner dying. And when he was dying, like in the moments of death, he said, all the love in the world goes with you. And like, just I'll be fine. You just go on to the big river.
It's so hard to do that. I mean, Meredith does it to Derek too, mm-hmm. in that moment. I think it's so hard. I mean, like, obviously I feel like, you know, you're like, okay, I'll have my time mm-hmm. to fall apart. But also there's like, if that's someone that was your partner, you want them to also take care of you. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's just so, I don't know. It really, this story just really fucking hit me, especially too, just like thinking about all the wildfires that have been happening, and just like that this isn't like a crazy story.
No, and I mean thinking, they're like with climate change, and this is just going to be
the beginning.
And so many people risking their lives to.
What a gnarly injury too.
Oh my God, he must have been in so much pain.
Yeah, hopefully shock takes over.
I would think your adrenaline would kick in and just. And him talking about too in the beginning, just acting like I've had many burns, like this one's from this, you know, fire, and this one's from this fire, but you can tell like this is a completely different mm-hmm. burn and mm-hmm. injury. It's crazy too that the body can withstand such injury to like hold on until.
No kidding. Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah.
Burns scare me the most.
And it's also really sad too, like that. I don't know if it's better or worse that no one like said out loud that he was gonna die. You know, like I think he knew and Bailey knew, and so it didn't even need to be said. Doesn't that happen in an episode? I'm sure there's a podcast ghost, or maybe you'll remember this, where they're like, you're not gonna it's the shooter episode with Bailey, where she was like, you're not going to die. You're not going to die. And he's like, you'll promise you'll tell me when I'm like, and Bailey does end up saying like, okay, now is the time I'm going to hold you. And like,
This
show is so depressing.
It really fucking is. I think Bailey handled this day really well too. And I love that Richard told her to put away the binder in the mm-hmm. beginning. Like, you know, this in your gut, like, you know what to do. And then his only advice to her was stand on the stairs. Mm-hmm. And then when she's speaking and he like hints to her, like a little higher.
Like, yeah. And like, they feel like they're being watched over.
Yeah.
Also when she starts to pull out the binder talking to them and he's like, got it. And
also,
she just does.
I felt like her speech wasn't that like, Well, I don't want to say that because the monologue too. Oh, that was in the second one about like the men listening. But I felt like I have a note that's like Bailey's talking forever.
Yeah, I did like the difference though from when Bailey's first day as chief, and then Richard coming to her at the end. You know, she fucks up, and this time I feel like she really leaned into Richard's help, and he was there to be like, "You got this," and here are ways that like you can support your staff. And she leaned into that in her uncertainty. She didn't
I don't need any help.
And she did a great job like brainstorming making the calf triage.
Yeah, which I was like, holy shit, they do that in COVID again. Yes. Which I almost wished in the COVID ones they'd reference.
Yes.
Like we've done this before, you know, but that was really cool for me to watch.
Yeah.
It was so cool too to see like all of these doctors who there's so many of them not on the show anymore, like be so great, like Jackson. You know, this was his thing, like burn and like taking over. And he's like, you have any questions you ask me this, like I miss, I don't know.
Like almost like the team that they were as like a hospital, you know?
Yes.
And even, I mean, we'll get into the really difficult episode of but The Sound of Silence. But even when at one point someone says like, to Maggie, you can't work on your family. And Karev is like, this is her whole damn family here. Like that's what I feel like we're missing in this newer season.
That's a good point. I agree. Yeah. Cause that gave me GGBs when he said that. I'm trying to think. Okay, so maybe we can talk about Riggs a little bit. Because him and Meredith in this episode are working on a burn victim who ends up being Mama Hunt's boyfriend.
Yes.
I don't know her name. I'm just going to keep calling her Mama Hunt.
That's great.
I feel like, again, the story's like kind of coming back to me about like it's Owen's sister, you know, and all that, but Riggs is definitely like taking the high road right now. I don't know if he ever gets to a point where he like yells back and like stops taking the shit, because clearly like with the hug from Owen's mom, like he was considered family to them.
Yes.
And what a loss for that mom who no longer has her daughter to have also lost Riggs in that too. And so it was like really, I can remember watching this first time being like, what the fuck?
Like what is the storyline? What's going on?
But then he fucking lets Owen punch him in the face twice.
Well, I think it's interesting too, because I think we're still really confused that we think we have all these, I think it's important to say we have all these rumors going on about Riggs. And it was like, I think I remember seeing this and wondering if they were brothers, remember?
Right, because the way he hugged the mom and he said, we're family.
Yeah, and then Owen said, like, you're not part of this family. And then we still don't know, said, you never told me you had a sister. So we still don't.
That they're not brothers. Yeah. Right? Which they sort of are. Like, but I think that's where they're probably trying to like lead us. The mystery of that is fun. I feel like I like that kind of mystery in a show. And it's shitty though that he goes into the surgery and is like,
Owen,
yeah.
Well, also, but Riggs is like very reckless in the beginning.
When he pulls out that spike.
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, and maybe it reminds me of what Owen was like when Owen came.
Exactly.
Like back from wherever he was stationed. I don't remember. I'm sorry.
Iraq?
Is that where? Yeah, okay. And it's like very trauma oriented, like in the field, this is how we do it. And that, it felt like a similar thing with Riggs. Like, we don't need to get a CT or whatever. We're just going to pull it out. And if they bleed, they bleed and we'll fix it, you know?
And then they were butting heads the whole surgery because, you know, she's like, this wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
He said that. And she's like, it would have. We just wouldn't have been here. They end up saving him, which is great because I don't know if Owen would have ever
forgiven anyone.
Right. And I think Riggs was feeling that pressure also.
Like, yes.
When he was operating on him. I don't know. I don't have that much to say about it other than it's interesting to see the dynamic between Riggs and Meredith, knowing that they end up having a romantic relationship.
Yes. I think this can lead us into maybe talking about Amelia and Meredith, because Meredith ends
and
up
getting... Meredith and Owen, kind of.
Yeah. So, right, exactly. So Meredith gets the story And she ends up getting the story from Mama Hunt.
I love that she goes to her and it's like, what do I need to be worried about him?
Yes. And I thought, and then she said, close the door, dear. And, you know, it's like this epic moment where Amelia's outside.
Yes.
And Meredith makes eye contact and shuts the door. And you, I think you think for a second that, like, she'll tell Amelia what's going on, but she doesn't. She keeps that very private.
And which I think, like, rightly so, when you eventually learn what it is, it wasn't her place to tell.
Absolutely not. It's not her place to tell. Both of them said some really fucked up shit.
Yeah, so I have, the quotes of that are in this thing. So I just want to read a little bit of it. There's the part about it where, you know, she says, like, I made a promise. Meredith says, I made a promise that I would help keep his head above water. And Amelia says, promise too. She says to Christina, so I'm watching him and I'm letting him be and I'm not sticking my nose. Amelia gets all pissed about, you know, Christina. She says, she calls her his ex-girlfriend. Amelia, or Meredith says, ex-wife. Amelia says, God, Meredith, you are the most loyal person I've ever met to everyone except me. You're loyal to some woman halfway across the world. Meredith says, yes, I am. She goes, when I am right here. Christina left you. I'm here. I'm your sister. Meredith says, you are not my sister. Christina is my sister. You are Derek's sister and Derek is gone. And then Penny comes in and Amelia yells, like, get out. And the thing, Meredith ends up calling Amelia a child. And then Amelia says to her, this is like the darkest of dark. She says, you wrap her around you. Like, oh, she's talking about Penny. She says, you wrap her around you like some sick widow shawl. The widow gray. She's okay. She's moving on. She'll never love again, but she's holding it together. That is crap. You've given up. You are crawling into your little hole and dying. You are hollow. And Derek would be sick about it if he could see it. He would be disgusted.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Those, and then Meredith says, I want you out of my house. And she was like, immediately, like, yeah. Or whatever she says.
Yeah.
No, she said, I think she says, done.
Yeah.
I think that Amelia's intensity in the beginning, I could understand that Meredith would be like, okay, no, I can't. Like, I can't tell you what's going on. Like, I made a promise to someone. This doesn't concern you, blah, blah, blah. But the minute she opens up that you're not my sister.
That opens up the whole, like,
and so anything I feel like that Amelia says, like, that's all really mean shit. But, like, Meredith welcomed all of that, in yes. my opinion. Like, yeah. She just opened up Amelia saying really, really hurtful things. Like,
she could have said, Christina is my sister too.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Like, you're not my sister. And it just goes, and we'll talk about, like, the Richard thing, but, like, clearly Meredith, like, has issue with Amelia. And
I think, like, seeing her in Derek's position.
Yes.
And, like, she is his relative. And although I don't, as a viewer, see a lot of similarities between Amelia and Derek, other than they're a little cocky, I guess. Like,
yeah.
But I don't think of it, but maybe Meredith sees more, like how Richard says, like, it's the wrong shepherd in your brain,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, I mean, this leads,
oh,
poor Amelia.
It's hard. Yeah. So she's at the bar, which she is drinking a San Pellegrino.
I know. And I was like, fuck, is she gonna order a drink?
I didn't think about it. When Riggs asked her, I was like, oh, wait. I was like, do they have a thing? Like, and I was like, oh, wait, no, she doesn't drink.
Yeah,
like,
she's an alcoholic.
Right.
Yeah, she's an addict.
And she says no first. And you're like, okay.
Yeah.
But then she changes it to a vodka soda.
Tonic.
And it's hard too, because I wonder, had no one asked her, would she have ordered one on her own, you
yes.
know? And I just feel...
I think she would have.
You do? And I feel sad. Like, it's not Riggs's fault.
Well, I think what's important to understand about, like, you can definitely, like, surround yourself with people who are, like, supportive of whatever addiction you have. But ultimately, if an alcoholic wants to drink, they're going to drink.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, even maybe not that night, but, like, if... You know, I don't think, like, Riggs is the one who broke her.
No.
And I just...
It's just so sad, too. So then
sad.
I'll just pick up until, like, the Meredith thing. But, like, in the next episode, you know, her hair is a little messed up. She's getting the hospital beds wrong.
Yep.
And she brushes it off as, like, who can remember this?
Yeah.
And she ends up making a personal choice to not see Meredith's patient because of personal reasons, not because of surgical reasons. And it just is.
So my question is, with the storyline of, so if you are a private practice fan, you watched Amelia go struggle through her addiction and lose Ryan and lose mm-hmm. her baby. And it was many episodes, and there was an intervention episode. I don't know if you remember that one. That one was
rewatch.
Really fucking tough to watch. So part of me was like grateful that we, like if they, because they had a relapse, like that we had an episode that fast forwarded 6 weeks that we didn't, I guess just because we've seen that with that character before. And I don't know. So what do you think? Or do you think that was a disservice that like we didn't see her go through this again?
And I think they showed it in the way like when they, cause you saw Meredith see her try to come visit her in her leather jacket and like Richard and her fighting and the way she's fighting with Richard, she's not in sound mind at that point. No, I feel the same as you. I also don't want to watch 6 weeks of Meredith healing.
No.
Like, you know, and I also think too that we have to like remember like alcoholics do relapse. Like there's no finish line.
Yeah.
And so unfortunately, like, but I also think that just because they do doesn't always mean that, you know, that's like it. Like I just think of it fresh in my mind is like the Dax Shepard
thing, absolutely.
Which like his relapse while it happened, he then talked about it. And like, I actually think it's good that they show that so that we know that she isn't perfect and like addiction is hard and it's not like you solve it and it's over, which they do that with Richard too.
I mean,
I'm glad we didn't have to like go through it all.
Yeah.
Especially with Meredith and her being at odds. I don't think it would have gone over well.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, it's just really rough. That fight just was like, whoo, especially like I also to the conversation that Meredith, like, I love that Meredith is still there for Owen and that he recognizes that. And, you know, she says to him like the, you never told me you had a sister, and we don't know the fallout of that conversation. Mm-hmm. But I don't know.
I mean, but pretty much she is still very, very loyal to Christina. And we see this in the seasons now, you know, mm-hmm. that they still do like callbacks to Christina and stuff, which I believe is you wouldn't have a friend, even if we're looking at this as real life, which this is not real life, but you wouldn't have a friend like Christina that you just like weren't loyal to anymore.
Absolutely not. Yeah.
And so it makes sense with her character that she would like look out for Owen because of what Christina asked her to do.
And I like that her way of being there for him is the same way like we've talked about last week, that that's how they'd be there for each other, which is not prodding and asking a bunch of questions, just being there. And and she knows that if she tells Amelia it, she's going to not do that.
Right. She's not going to give him the space that he needs to come forward with whatever he needs to deal with in like a safe space. Right. So.
Yep.
Before we get to the next episode, do we want to...
Oh,
I was going to say Maggie and DeLuca.
Let's do it. Yes. It's not... I love it.
I really do not remember them being together. At all. And so
why didn't it continue?
I don't know. They're such a good, well, so then while I was watching this, when they said like, he has unprofessional feelings, it's obviously not just sleeping with him, I started thinking about, spoiler alert, his memorial and trying to remember how Maggie was responding in the memorial. And I remember like, I think she was like very, very emotional. And I didn't remember them being together. Right. So that makes way more sense now.
Yeah, it's sad. It's also sad that he's gone. You just start to really like a guy.
And then they just get stabbed in the show. Yeah.
But no, I thought it was great that she was vulnerable with him. She came back because I think that goes against some ways what Maggie wants to do.
Yeah.
I also get her like conundrum of like, in order for me to do my job, I have to compartmentalize, which mm-hmm. I don't think is possible. So perhaps something like that is what ends up not making it work. But I don't know.
Yeah. That just small little thing. But Joe.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would be so... She has... As much as Joe can sometimes annoy me, everything that's happening to her, I would be so pissed.
Yes.
Like, Alex is driving them to work and he's, you know... I get that Meredith was like, go away, because she knows it's about a ring, but no one else does.
Right.
And that's just so rude. And I think, though, what I've noticed about these episodes and the next one, too, which we'll talk about in a second, like, Alex is a caretaker at heart. I mean, not even if he wants to be, because he had to growing up. And I feel like where Meredith is, he doesn't know boundaries. And I don't think he puts himself first. And by that, like, Joe is a part of him and his life, and he's not putting that first. He's putting Meredith. And so I'm really glad that the second episode ends with Meredith telling him, like, I will be fine. Mm-hmm. Like, you can have more than one person.
Yes.
Because I think that he isn't treating Joe right. And I do think he loves her so much, but you can't do that.
It's really tough when he ends up coming into the room to kind of check on her, and she's like working on that patient, and they get in that really big fight, which also, I know that patient's like probably on meds or something or knocked out, still, but like, so they're fighting, like,
Meredith was knocked out and she still hurt or saw everything.
Yeah. But the two lines that really stuck out to me, that really broke my heart, was Joe says to Krev, she is always your priority. Mm-hmm. And Krev ends up saying, she's the only one I can count on. And like, I also get that too. When you have like had a shit life and like a shit childhood, and then you entered into this program and everyone hated you, and then this person is stuck by your side, like, it makes sense that like you would be like, they're the only one who is there for me. Because also too, and I'm not like putting this on Joe, but Joe's also not being there for Karev in this moment, you know, right. And rightfully so, because he's not being there for her. But I can see how like in a twisted, like self-fulfilling prophecy way, he would then be like, she's the only one I can count on because you're fucking standing here yelling at me.
Right.
When really she's just asking to be loved and be just as important in his life as Meredith is. And so they just are completely missing one another.
Yeah. And Alex's story still is just so like, even the, like the Izzy left, the this, like all these things. Yeah, it is. And just his relationships with people and his family members is... people leave. Like, I feel like he even expects Joe to not stick around, you know, like,
which makes it me so mad that, spoiler alert, he's the one who ends up leaving, because everyone's always leaving him and then he leaves.
They honestly should have killed him.
Honestly, like, it just doesn't make, like, he, it does not sit true to his character about like hunkering down and sticking and being with people.
Unless you think that his children somehow trump all of that, but either
but they
way,
don't.
He could have made it work.
He could have made it
work. Yeah, I still will. Oh, that will forever be an issue for me.
Yeah, but I can imagine being Joe and being so, if I was in living with, oh, it is sad though too, when she said like, I had to like drag you away, pull you away from her. I wouldn't appreciate hearing that as Krev, but then I would just feel so embarrassed being in a relationship with someone and them saying like, she's the only one I can count on.
Yeah. That's a real slap in the face.
Yeah. Everyone was just slapping each other in the face in these episodes.
Yeah. And you know, I don't have a lot to say about her and Steph's like makeup, because I didn't quite like understand. Like,
I mean, I guess
they like, miss each other.
I mean, I understand that like she's crying and like she tries to play it off like she's not, but then like Steph doesn't even acknowledge that she's upset in the like storage closet. And I can see why she would be really upset about that. Like, am I not human enough that you can't even ask me how I'm doing or whatever?
Sorry, I was talking about the final scene with them. Like,
oh yeah. That
I was like, so you're okay? Like,
yeah, I don't know. I think they just needed to find a way to resolve it. And so they did.
Yeah, she's definitely probably having like an invisible feeling day, which is why it's just so unfortunate. Like when she says to Alex, when she walks in and she's obviously about to like leave or say that she needs to spend some time alone. And she says, I can't keep feeling like everyone's second choice.
Yeah.
And that would just be such a hard feeling to have.
Yeah.
And she obviously yells at him for his proposal, which was great because it wasn't good. And they leave us on a yes or no, which then the next episode, it's obvious that she must have said no.
Yeah, because, or like, or I need to think about it, or right. We need to take a break or something.
Or then the next day Meredith got beat up and there was just no like Because yeah. I assume, did you think that Alex was taking care of the children?
Yeah, and being with Meredith. Yeah.
Okay, because I don't think Amelia would have. She was drinking.
Yeah, no, I think Alex was taking care
and
of the
maybe
kids.
Maggie was helping. Maggie lives in the house too, so I guess the two of them.
Yeah.
But I think Alex completely like abandoned the Joe thing.
Yes.
And it was so sweet when Joe came in and put the blanket
on him,
over him. And then, you know, which like Meredith saw that happen, which mm-hmm. I think also led her to make that speech to him at the end.
Yeah. So I feel like we should just talk about this episode, which is really, really hard. And I don't know that I ever want to rewatch this episode.
No, I probably won't.
It's
really well directed, Denzel Washington.
So this, it's really well done. It
reminded me of watching the Revenant.
Oh God, when the bear.
Yeah, like, cause I couldn't watch it.
Yeah.
What was your body doing when you knew it was about to happen? Mine was so tense.
Yeah, same. And it just, like, I don't like violence.
Yeah.
And I just don't like violence against women.
Yeah.
And I know this was, like, a medical condition or whatever, but and I'm not saying anyone likes violence against women, but, like, it was just, like, oh, fuck, God damn it. When it reminds me of like zombie movies.
Yeah.
You know?
Cause he didn't seem like a person.
No. And I, when she was, the thing is obviously I have not watched this episode more than once because when she was, working on Lou, I didn't remember that it was him.
Yeah. I have a question. I was like, is Lou the one? Oh shit. He starts seizing. And then I kind of, also, I think that was important though, that they showed him how sweet he was.
Yes.
Because otherwise I don't know if that apology would have even felt redeeming.
Yes.
But because you like
knew about his children and like,
and right away I was like, oh, he's so sweet. Like,
yes. Yeah. And
she's all alone. Everyone slowly starts leaving.
Oh, that's the worst part too. Is just like, yeah. What? And then like,
when you see her head bash up, like when you see April working on her patient,
yes.
And the blinds.
Yes. And then when you just hear when they like come in, when Penny comes in and you like hear like whimpering and like, and that fucking, and before even that happens, there's some pretty epic music. It's like really scary music in the beginning of the episode. And it feels like another horror movie. It's like, oh, this is like, it's not our normal, like drama. It's like, it's very creepy specific music. Yeah. Like something really bad is about to happen.
The sound was really impactful.
Yes.
In this episode, which it did really remind me of The Revenant now that I think about it. Because you couldn't always see anything, but you could hear it.
Yes. Yeah.
And so there was so also we were talking about this in our Zoom for this episode. You really get it from Meredith's perspective for a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
And Meredith loses her hearing, which at first, like you think maybe she's paralyzed because she can't wiggle her toes and feet. And then Alex realizes that they can't. She probably can't hear. But I have to say what Krev's face when he first sees her is just like...
Kind of reminds me of when Derek sees her in season 3 with the ferry boat.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Same thing. And also, oh, poor Amelia comes in so nonchalant. Like, what do we have here? You know, like, and then realizes it's Meredith. And that's when she shuts down. She almost does what Derek did, where she falls to her the ground and sits holding her knees. I love that Stephanie jumps in as neuro.
Yes.
She starts doing the neuro check. I love that part so much. Like I was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
I
want to back up just a little bit. Did you notice that the title card is blurry?
Yes. How her eyesight was is what it.
Yep. So, I mean, this is a difficult episode.
Oh, when Jackson opens her jaw.
Yeah, because you can't, like, it's silent. Like, it's eerily, like, a lot of it is very, very silent. And so, pretty much.
There's no dialogue.
No, so pretty much what we're seeing is, like, Meredith heal through 6 weeks and watch her watch what's going on.
Yeah.
I think that's important to say. It's like, and like you said, it's like really through her perspective that we're like, we as viewers. So like oftentimes she'll open her eyes in the episode and there will be like someone standing over her and she can't talk and she can't hear. And so there's no dialogue. You can see like Penny talking at her, but you can't hear.
It's also so weird too, the contrast of like, you feel like you're Meredith and you, how bad she feels, but then everyone's looking at her with smiles.
Yeah.
You know, like Callie.
Great in surgery. You can kind of see like, you know, like this is going really well, whatever. And then anytime these people, she can't hear, she's pressing her pain pump. And so she's like knocking herself out to like not have to look at these people be really cheery towards her. Yeah. You know?
Then there's the scene where they're looking at her jaw, I believe, like a x-ray of her jaw.
Yes.
And they like come over and realize she still can't hear. They go over and she has to watch their faces like,
yeah,
look like, ooh, this isn't good. And then that's when Penny has her like, well, first of all, Penny finds her.
Yes.
First thing. Second thing, Meredith is like trying to get her, Penny brings her scans over to her, which I think like at first she wants to see and then is overwhelmed.
Yes.
By.
Very overwhelmed.
But still like Penny does that. Penny also cleans her mouth out, which at first Meredith pulls away from her. Do you see that?
Yeah.
Like, and then she ends up like letting her do it. When Jackson opens her.
Good God. And that. Also, when they lean her up to take an x-ray of her and the wailing that she makes is so fucking sad.
Obviously it's hard to be Meredith. It would be very hard to be those doctors too. I like felt for Jackson when he was like, we can do this, but it's going to hurt so damn bad. Like he just like,
ugh. Yeah.
My worst nightmare is having my jaw wired.
Yeah, I know someone who he broke his jaw and it was so sad. I mean, he lost so much weight in healing because you can't eat. Like it's a liquid diet, you know? And he was like a pretty burly man and then just like,
ugh, just that panic. So then there's the scene where she's crying really hard in bed by herself. And you see Alex come in with like his regular clothes on.
Yes.
I know I kind of skipped on accident. Okay, wait. Do you want to talk about her holding his hand? Or just like she holds Alex's hand before she goes into surgery.
Oh my God. Yeah. And doesn't let go.
Yeah.
Oh.
But yeah, so Alex comes in, she's like sobbing. And I love this is like directing. You start to hear sounds because it's dead silent.
Yeah.
Not even like, music.
Yeah. There's like a little ringing.
Yep. And then you start to hear like Alex, his voice, but you can't quite hear what he's saying. And then eventually you hear, he gets a napkin. He's like, just get it out. God, you have a lot of snot. You might have a serious condition. Come on, woman, blow your damn nose. And then she starts like laughing and he's like, mayor. And she looks at him and, oh.
And he's like, can you hear? And she shakes her head. Yes. This is a scene we've been waiting for.
Yes.
When he kisses her forehead and wraps his arm around her.
He's like,
her.
Oh, he says like.
Yeah. And he's so fucking happy that she can hear again.
Their faces are so close together and just like cry laughing. Like,
yeah. Ugh. Also too, I love, like, it reminds me of when Bert gets in bed with Christina after she like loses the pregnancy and she can't stop crying. And it's a similar thing. Like he puts the thing down and he gets into the bed with her and it's, yeah. And then Lou wants to apologize to her and she's like, doesn't.
Yeah. She asks about Lou. He had no memory of it.
But she wants nothing to do with it at first.
Do you like the scene when they're all talking to her because she can hear and Callie starts yelling and Meredith is like too loud?
Yeah, like, and then she gets like well enough for her kids to come visit.
Arizona puts makeup on her.
Yeah, and her mouth is still wired shut. She could kind of talk, but she can't really. And it was like, don't really smile with your mouth
open.
You look
scary.
Yeah. And she has like, I don't know, did she get trached? Like she has a.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And then she has like a little shawl over her. And which is interesting because it's like in the previous episode, it's like the widow shawl.
Oh, yeah.
She has like a shawl on her.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And then Zola doesn't want to come. Like, it's just like not having it.
And the baby is crying.
Yeah.
And Arizona recognizes that and is like, okay, let's go get something. Also, Alex wearing the baby Bjorn.
Yeah.
Like, just so emotional.
Like, Zola, you were talking about mommy. Like, you keep asking when we can see her. And she's like, I don't want to go see her. And then Meredith's just like pleading, like, come here, come here, come here. And then they're like, some other time, and leave her alone. And she starts having a straight up panic attack, which I would too. Like,
she like throws, she like, It's like she looks like she tries to get out of her body. Like,
that I have had that feeling. Okay, I've not been Meredith, but that exact, that feeling of trying to get out of your body.
Just, yeah.
Like, I cannot physically be in this space anymore. And Penny shows up. And God damn it, Penny, you did a good job. You know what? She did great.
Meredith says she can't breathe. And Penny cuts open her jaw. And I love Jackson comes in. And he's like, do you know whatever you could have done? And Penny uses her voice and says, she is my patient. I know what I am doing.
Yes.
And like, I just felt.
She needed some air. Like she gets to have some air. Like, so she can go a day without having
this. Right. Like you could redo it in the morning. Yes. You know, that part just like, oh, was so full circle. I felt like Penny took everything Meredith has taught her and did what she knew was right versus when she was with Derek and she was too afraid to speak up and to not do the right thing.
Yes. So, I mean, I have Penny makes me want to cry. She needed some air. So I got her some damn air. Yeah. And like, it's like that monologue of like, you know, say what, don't let fear keep you quiet. You have a voice, so use it. Speak up and shout your answers. And that's what Penny does in that moment. And she advocates for her patient and for Meredith. And I think Meredith witnesses that and then is on the receiving end of it too. You know, she's cared for in the way that she needs to be in that moment by Penny. Then Amelia shows up.
Yeah, Love Frau Meredith is a bad patient, which I would be too after that.
Oh, she's
like throwing ice cubes at them.
A bad patient.
I like how Bailey at first is like, hey, how are we? Okay, all right, we're going to leave now. Like
She throws
a smoothie at Amelia.
Amelia
makes it about herself, though. It's so hard. She's like, that is something that is hard for me with Amelia's excuses right now. I do believe Amelia, the character, gets much better, but in this moment, like, she still makes it about how she is feeling.
Yes.
So then they end up bringing in the big guns. Richard comes in.
The big guns. Here he comes.
He puts her in a wheelchair.
He sings My Girl while he's pushing her. She keeps writing on the board, like,
what are we doing?
What's happening?
Yeah. Angrily. He's just like, I got sunshine.
Which was the song that I danced with my dad to on my wedding day. Yeah.
And he's just bopping around. They sit on a bench.
He takes her outside, which I think is good. She hasn't, because Penny mentions that too. Like, she's been in this room. She has not left this room.
Yes.
And so
you're right.
I think it's important. She gets outside. She gets out in the sun. She looks pissed as hell.
Yeah.
And
I don't have the whole quote, but she says, you know, like, Amelia is upset because she went to another trauma just because she was mad at you, whatever. And he says a bunch of things. And then he says, you need to forgive her for not being Derek, for being the wrong shepherd, just enough to remind you what's missing, but not enough to bring him back. And then he says, you need to forgive yourself for hating him for dying too soon, which I think, like, maybe she has not even realized that she also is mad at him, at Derek. And I think if anyone knows anything about forgiveness, it's Richard, because he does the 12 steps. And that's like such a big part about it, is making amends. And I feel like it's nice to see him using that in an applicable way to Meredith, even if she doesn't want to hear it.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was a beautiful speech. And at the end, when he says, let it go, Meredith, and forgive, because really, like, ultimately, a lot of the time, you know, I would really think, like, forgiveness isn't necessarily about the other person. It's about you a lot of the time. So you can move on with your life. And that whole part, like, let it go. Like, just, it's time for her. And, like, imagine being trapped in a room and you can't speak and you can't communicate. There's nothing to dull you, except for pain meds, but, like, to dull you from the fucking grief that you have felt with the loss of your husband. Like, that's, it gives you a lot of fucking time to think. And so he is just, like, telling her it's time. Like, it is time to let it all go, because she is, obviously, I think she's extremely traumatized from this horrible event of being, but she's also traumatized from all of the pain that her life has presented to her thus far and all of the loss. And so she's so fucking angry.
I remember really wondering why they did this to her, like, so soon after. I was like, what the fuck? Her husband just, like, this is ridiculous. And part of me now, after just hearing you say all that, is wondering, like, I still think it's a little extreme, but, like, in a way, this, because this is the mid-season finale, and this is the season after Derek dies. I wonder what the second half is like, and if this really does the 6 weeks where she didn't have to be a parent, she didn't have to be a doctor, she had to just sit with her thoughts, which she did not do when Derek died.
Yes.
She went and moved and, like,
yeah,
gave birth to a baby. Like,
right.
I feel like this gave her time to forgive him and perhaps let go and start over.
Yes.
Like, really start over.
Yeah. And then it's really sad because she ends up, after that speech, she ends up going and speaking with Lou, or, like, letting
his whole
Lou.
Family.
Yeah, and he's, like, holding his daughter's hand, and he has his flowers, and it's just really sad. And then he asks her a question, and he's like, "Oh, right, I forgot you can't speak," or whatever. And then she ends up reaching out her hand to him, which is just a sign,
and
honestly.
He, like, grips it.
Like a universal sign of forgiveness. And I mean, it was tough at first because I was like, is he going to actually say the words, "I'm sorry"? Because he kept being like, "I would never, I'm not this person," blah, blah. And then he finally says, "I'm just so sorry." And I think she realizes that, like, that it was, that he wouldn't have done that to her had he been not
still,
in the
though.
Right state of mind. And then Amelia shows up to give her 30-day chip.
Yep, and that's when we find out Meredith can talk.
Yeah.
What if she says something? And then she says, she says, "I'm trying."
And she says, "I know."
Yep, and then she's just not ready to forgive yet.
Yeah.
Which I
and
think
then
is
I
fair.
Like how Amelia tries to take her 30-day chip back and Meredith puts her hand on it like, yeah, no, I will keep this.
She goes back in the room.
She goes back in the room and, like, looks around and Karev finds
her. You can hear the sounds, too.
Yeah, and Karev finds her and she's like, "Let's go home." And that's when she has this beautiful speech to Karev.
She seems so light.
Yeah, just about, like, she's, and, you know, admitting, like, "I have needed you a lot in these past couple months. And, like, Joe loves you. Like, go be with her."
She said she posted on the wall, "Loves you."
Yes, like that. And, like, "I will be okay and you can have more than one person." And, like, gives Karev the permission to, like,
take a break.
Take a break and not, like, put Meredith back together. Like, that's her job. And I think she is at the point now where, like, through this whole experience and through what Richard said, like, maybe she's a little more willing to do that on her own. I mean, we've talked about how, like, Meredith, I mean, she lost Christina. She ends up losing Karev. She loses Derek. But, like, as her character has grown through these seasons, like, she, through all of the trauma, she really has grown into being a person that is capable of being a good mother and a good doctor and, like, upholding everyone else.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that she said, "You can have more than one person. I used to think you couldn't. Turns out I have a whole damn village."
Yes.
So I think for her, that was really realizing that she does have more than just, like, everyone is there for her.
Yes.
I just think, for Alex, who's such a caretaker, he needs to be told that.
Yes.
And so that
made
me.
And then she says, "Go be with Joe."
Yeah. And he goes and sees her, and we don't know
what happens. We don't know what's going to happen. That's the episode, y'all.
Yeah.
Really tough. Really fucking tough.
Yeah, especially because I wasn't expecting it.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, no.
Yeah, yeah. It was a tough one to watch.
But good. Like, quality.
Yeah.
You know? Let's do notes and trivia, and then just a reminder, our post-op topic is going to be about Arizona and a little bit about Richard with her and her trying to find her wings. So, notes and trivia. This episode's title originated from the song "Things We Lost in the Fire," originally sung by Bastille.
The episode scored 8.5 million viewers.
The table read took place on October 7th, 2015.
This is the first time Amelia sits in the front seat while carpooling. Jesus Christ.
As per usual, the mid-season finale provides us with several cliffhangers.
Does Joe accept Alex's proposal?
Will Amelia drink result in a relapse?
What's the deal with Owen's sister?
What will Jackson tell April?
Oh, we didn't talk about them. What are the consequences of Owen's violence?
In this episode, the cafeteria was used to care for patients due to the ER being over capacity. This happens again in Fight the Power due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Who went in and added this?
Yeah, seriously. This episode's title originated from the song "The Sound of Silence," originally sung by Simon and Garfunkel.
The episode scored 8.28 million viewers.
The table read for this episode took place on October 14, 2015.
I'm just going to skip the next part. The cast was only informed a day before his arrival that Denzel Washington was going to direct the episode.
The episode has Meredith in almost every scene.
The episode was submitted for consideration in three categories at the 68th Emmy Awards: direction, sound mixing, and single camera picture editing.
The episode features a black opening title card, which is normally shown at the end of the episode. The last time it was used in the beginning was in She's Leaving Home.
This time, some of the letters are blurred to reflect Meredith's blurry eyesight after the attack.
While the press releases lists, I don't know how to say
Giacomo.
Giacomo.
Giannotti.
Giannotti. As a series regular, the credits of this episode show him as a guest star.
It feels like for Catherine Fox, like, it should be Meredith.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Like,
Alex, she, maybe?
Richard for the forgiveness speech, but I feel like Meredith, like, is the one who really overcame all of it. Penny did a good job, though, too.
Ooh, will Penny ever get it again?
Maybe Penny should get it for, like, really
finding her voice.
Yeah, and then, like, helping Meredith in that moment.
Which is also kind of a win for Meredith, because Meredith is her teacher and, like, the patient. So it's like Meredith, but with a side of Penny, or Penny with a side of Meredith.
Yes, I agree. Okay, so I want to rate this episode first.
Okay.
I want, for the drama,
okay,
I would give it, like, an 8.5 out of 10 scalpels.
Okay.
But for, like, ever watching again, like, one. I don't ever want to watch Meredith, like, go through that again. It was just really difficult to watch. Like, so it was, like, great television, I felt like.
Do you like to rewatch the Shooter one? Not like to, but, like, because I feel similarly. That one's hard for me to watch, too.
Yeah, that one's hard, too. But I will watch that one more over this one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know why. It's just, like,
this was so realistic.
Yeah. Not that the Shooter one isn't, but, like, I don't know. So what do you say?
I'm going to give it a 8.5 out of 10 just as a whole.
Okay, so same as me.
Yeah, for me, I would rewatch it again only because I would want to see the Alex Meredith moments.
Yes, I,
like, I'm a weird sucker for those kind of cry moments, but I also could just go to my Alex Karev compilation videos on YouTube.
And, sure.
But, like, that scene is so stuck in my brain.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm going to do 8.5. It was quality Grey's Anatomy.
Yes.
Also shocking if you weren't expecting it, though.
Very shocking.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, stick around. We'll throw in the April Jackson thing in post-op, too.
Yeah, because we forgot.
There's
about,
like,
that
one sentence to say, really. Yeah. But, or actually, there's kind of a bit, but
whatever. So, if you want to hear about that, be a $10 patron.
Yeah, then turn it off when you're done if you want. All right. Thanks again for listening. And our time of death is
2108.
Beep.